Hi, everyone. This is Marissa Carpico, the film editor at thepopbreak.com. I'm here with my co-host, Matt Taylor. Say hello, Matt.
Hi, everybody.
And we are back for the new thing this year we're doing for the Way Too Early Oscar podcast by combining like seven categories in a single episode because we are behind the eight ball. That's the theme of this season.
We're crazy.
Trying to catch up. We're crazy. It's just, you know, it's too much. There's too much going on. This time we are going to do probably the most we've ever done in a single episode. We are doing best visual effects, best sound, best makeup, makeup and hairstyling, and best cinematography. So let's just jump into those. Let's start with visual effects, I suppose. Why not?
Yeah.
It could be any thing. The nominees are The Creator, Jay Cooper, Ian Comley, Andrew Roberts, and Neil Corbould. Godzilla Minus One, Takashi Yamazaki, Kyoko Shibuya, Masaki Takahashi, and Tatsuji Nojima. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Stephanie Coretti, Alexis Weishbro, I don't know how to say that one, Guy Williams, and Theo Bialik. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, Alex Vutka, Simone Coco, Jeff Sutherland, and Neil Corbould. Oh, look at Neil. Two nominations.
Good for him.
Napoleon, Charlie Henley, Luke Ewan, Martin Fenouillet. Wow, this is word salad. Simone Coco again. And man, our Neil Corbould for a third time. What a year for this guy. Yeah. All right. Well, this is actually a fairly solid category. I balk at anything being from the MCU in these, considering the way they look. But what are your thoughts on, you know, who should win, who will win, and, you know, any other, any extras you might have?
I mean, I will say you and I both hate the MCU movies as of late. And I really,
but this one especially,
I really hated this one. Yes, this is one where I was like, thank God I saw at the draft house so I can keep ordering food, because if I couldn't order food, I would contemplate walking out. But by the time like the third cute animal died on screen, I was like, what am I here for? But I will say, at the very least, that one looks decent. So I'm like, okay, like the special effects look finished, unlike Quantumania, where it's like, what evil did they do here, basically? But I mean, it's a more or less solid category. You have things like The Creator, where I'm like, this movie is so fucking boring and like could not care less about what's going on in it, but like it looks stunning and it's cheaper than the Hollywood productions in this, at least, and like it looks, I would say, better than Guardians and Napoleon at the very least. Napoleon being here is kind of like, gee, Agam, there's room for everybody. Like, because I even like that movie, but it really, I was like, oh, okay, sure. Like, if I was Christopher Nolan, not that Oppenheimer is short on love this year, but like Oppenheimer not being here is stupid. Like, it's like, he recreated,
especially because it's like the only one doing interesting things with visual effects.
Yeah, it's just very silly he did not make it here and got in everywhere else. It's just kind of like what happened there. But I will say, for me, at the very least, The Creator might be the best looking of the five, but my vote would easily go to Godzilla Minus One, which like looks stunning and was made for a fraction of the budget compared to the rest of these. And I mean, they're doing very different things, granted, so it feels kind of silly to compare them, even though they are in the same franchise, theoretically. But like, it looks so much better than like Godzilla versus Kong and stuff like that. Like, you know, just in terms of execution, where I'm like, oh, like, just shows you how like, even with a smaller budget, you can still do something really amazing. And I think it getting in here is very, very cool. So I would love to see it take the award. If Oppenheimer is not, you know, making it to the five, what about you?
Yeah, I think it's such a cool nomination because that movie is so good. I mean, it blew me away. I mean, I heard it was good, but goddamn, it's good. And yeah, like I would love it to win just because it's like, you're right, the level of difficulty much higher than the others. But I'd be satisfied with like, I mean, I don't know, anything could win at this point. I probably think it's going to be The Creator at the, I don't know, but. Because, yeah, like, without Oppenheimer, it's like, who cares? But I don't know. I do think, like, you're right. The Creator is, like, one of the most boring films I've ever watched. But visually, it is unbelievable, honestly. It is, like, if it were any good, it would become this, like, next great sci-fi movie that would influence stuff. But unfortunately, it is not good. It is just devoid of emotion, devoid of any really compelling narrative. Devoid of any good performances, except for the child, maybe.
The performances really is what hurt that movie. Like, I think we need to reposition John David Washington. I don't think he has the charisma to be a movie star, unfortunately.
No. I've been saying this for years. And, like, that one, I was like, listen, man, we really need to have a serious conversation about whether this guy is a leading man, because I don't think, like... That movie might have worked if you'd had someone really charismatic and interesting in that role, but you just didn't. You know?
I think a movie where Allison Janney plays like a soldier, like should not be this boring. Like it's like, God, what a waste.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. That movie just is. It doesn't work in about 20 different ways except for the visual effects. I mean, I'll also, let's be honest, I wouldn't mind a Mission Impossible win because we love the Mission Impossibles, even though that one hurt me deeply.
Yeah, it's you know, the first Oscar nomination for any of them, which is insane and embarrassing and crazy. I would love to see it get it just because those movies are so good. So I would be, you know, it's not even like the best special effects in this lineup.
No,
honestly. But, like, who cares? It's great.
Yeah, let's just have fun. Okay, so let's move on to sound. The nominees are, once again, the Creator. Ian Voight, Eric Adal, Ethan van der Rijn, Tom Ozenich, and Dean Zupanicic. Oh, there's a lot of repeats in these, too, again. Maestro, Stephen A. Morrow, Richard King, Jason Ruder, Tom Ozanich and Dean Zupanicic. They're like a team, I guess. let's see. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Chris Munro, James H. Mather, Chris Burdon, and Mark Taylor. No relation. Oppenheimer, Willie Burton, Richard King, Gary A. Rizzo, and Kevin O'Connell. The Zone of Interest, Tarn Willers, and Johnny Byrne. A lot of overlap. Obviously, with a couple extra. And I think, like, actually all of these have interesting sound work, for sure. You know, the Creator has to, like, invent all of these sounds for, like, sci-fi monsters and stuff. Well, not monsters, they're robots. Maestro has to, you know, do so much with music. All of these things that, like, Oppenheimer, again, creating incredible soundscapes. But I think it would be criminal for anything to win except for Zone of Interest, frankly. And I should win and almost definitely will win. Because sound is so integral to what makes that film so chilling. Because the thing that is maddening about watching that film is you know what's happening in the distance and you can hear it, but we never see it. And there's something so... heinous about that unseen horror that you can tell is happening. You know, the sounds are giving cues of what could be happening over the wall of the concentration camp, and yet your mind fills it into the most horrible possible situation. That movie, this constant like hum of it of many things happening is part of what makes it is truly what makes it so upsetting. I mean, it's just like every time there's a stop in the sound, like a single moment of silence, the relief is visceral, truly. What are your thoughts? I'm assuming they're basically the same.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, back in July when I saw Oppenheimer, I was – and, like, the – you know, you got to the atomic bomb scene, the testing scene. I was like, oh, nothing's going to beat this for sound. It's, like, revelatory sound. But, like, yeah, Zone of Interest, it's on another level. It is incredible sound work and truly so disturbing and well-utilized in, like, how effectively just, like, they – scene after scene utilize sound, and it has stuck with me. I mean, I watched that movie at the New York Film Festival, so, you know, back in like October, and it's not a movie I can imagine ever returning to be totally honest, and it has stuck with me ever since then. It is like some of those scenes are just so haunting, and if anything else won, it would frankly just be a total like lost for the category, because it's just like everything else is good here. This is a very like frankly like creator is impressive in the way that it like, you know, like you said, creates this whole sci-fi world, but like easily the most forgettable of these five. But the other three, Maestro, Mission Impossible, and Oppenheimer, are really really strong contenders, but Zone of Interest is just so like on the level, and if anything else won, it would just be like, what are they doing here? Like, it's they have to take this home. It's the most deserving award, honestly, that Zone of Interest could get, I think, even more so than director of picture.
Yeah, absolutely. I the only alternates I can think of would be much lighter, and honestly, I mean, I do mean them, but like, I think sound wise, there are few things. You're right, there's the Oppenheimer, the first test. I mean, that test is like it pure cinema, right? Mm-hmm. Zone of Interest. And then honestly, we got two incredible concert docs last year that deliberately blow your face off. I mean, when Cruel Summer starts in Taylor Swift's Eras Tour concert doc, I burst into tears basically, because it was just so this wave of sound and like the joy of it, and people were just so excited. I was like, my God, this is like, I don't know, it was something happened. And I'm not even that big of a Taylor Swift fan. I didn't even care about seeing her in concert. Like, I don't even feel any FOMO after seeing that doc. But like, yeah, I don't know. I thought that was incredible. And like, I think the editing of the sound editing, particularly of Renaissance, is like nuts, because she's constantly like basically edging you on when the goddamn songs are gonna start. Like, I think it's Alien Superstar, when they basically do this like montage. Well, like it's about to start and like a couple notes start, and then it cuts out because something happened at the concert, and you could hear every time that happened the audience being like, oh my God, like they were so pissed, like. But she just kept doing this, you know, it was like, Beyonce, just let us hear the fucking song. But she's like, she's fucking with you. So I don't know. I think like those two are such obvious things, but like, why aren't they here? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. A couple of these could go, like, compared to those things. Like, you know, no disrespect to Mission Impossible and the creator and even Maestro. Like, I don't remember y'all. I really don't for the sound. Like, nothing. So like, I don't know. I just feel like, let's be honest, those are two films where sound was integral and so forward and so memorable that I just think we could have acknowledged that.
I mean, I would love that, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
And I have two, one being The Killer, which just like
every time you say it, I giggle.
It's you know, the made for the meme. It's a shame that I didn't see that many memes about this, but
no one did it. If I had any video editing skills, I would have done it by now.
It's ridiculous. But I mean, it's the same with Fincher movie. He makes movies that are impeccably technically crafted, and it is unsurprisingly unimpeachable on that front. And then the other one that I really stuck out to me, The Taste of Things. Which is a movie that just the more and more I dwell on it, the more and more I'm like, easily one of my favorites of the year. So long, there are such long scenes in that movie of no dialogue, and just there's no music in the movie either. It's just purely the sound of people in the kitchen, and it is just as exciting as like a summer blockbuster, basically. And I found it so deeply fascinating. And whenever I am cooking now and I hear, like, I add something to a frying pan and I hear like the sizzle, I'm like, taste of things adjacent, here we go. It'll stick with me forever. That to me is one that just in general should have shown up in so many different categories and it did not.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, what an exquisite film, and such a usually, like, I don't know, Oscar obvious kind of film, but like completely ignored for whatever weird reason. Okay, let's move on to makeup and hairstyling. Let's see, let me find it on the list here. Makeup and hairstyling nominees are Golda, Karen Hartley Thomas, Susie Battersby, and Ashra Kelly Blue, Maestro Kazuhiro, K. Georgiou, and Laurie McCoy Bell, Oppenheimer, Louisa Abel, Poor Things, Nadia Stacey, Mark Coulier, and Josh Weston, Society of the Snow, Anna Lopez, Puigcerveri, and David Marti, and Monse Ribe. It's the first time we're talking about Society of the Snow, actually. And the only
we just watched it.
Yeah, we literally just watched it moments ago. Not moments, but pretty much. Thoughts on what will win, what should win? This is a pretty solid category for the most part.
Yeah. I think it seems like Maestro is sort of a foregone conclusion that it's going to win. And I wouldn't hate it. I think it's fine, you know, discourse, speed and or whatever. I just think it is somewhat of an unimaginative winner here, and I would really like to see something like Poor Things get it, just because, you know, it's certainly more in your face than something like Maestro is, but, like, nonetheless very impressive and cool to look at. And then also, I will say, Oppenheimer has decent old-age makeup, which is usually... you know, cursed. So just the fact that it's decent is good enough for me. But also, I will say, the shot of when Oppenheimer is giving the speech to after they build the bomb, and there's that he imagines the woman who, you know, is like her face is damaged because of like his imagined bomb and everything like that. That shot has stuck with me since seeing the film, and one of the more memorable shots I think of the year, and that has a big thing to do with makeup, so I would love to see that get it as well. I just like, I like, wouldn't hate Maestro winning it, it's fine. I just do think, like, in general, it's always so boring when the Academy just goes for like the biopic
prosthetics.
Yeah, obviously Oppenheimer's a biopic as well, but like, you know, I think the win would be for something a little different than just making someone look like someone else. So
yeah, that's a great scene to point to, because I was sort of thinking of the later, older age or makeup in that film. But you're right, that scene is so grotesque simply because of what they're doing with makeup and, you know, the imagined, his imagined horrors of what, what's happening in Hiroshima. Anything else you want to say about this one before we move on? I mean, actually, I think we've covered. Oh, well, we need to figure out, are there any other like things you would have put in there?
So I will say there's one really obvious one that I'm shocked got nowhere. I guess it did underperform at the box office, but Dungeons and Dragons looks phenomenal for a blockbuster these days, which
especially
the makeup. Like, yeah. There's like, I forgot what the name of the character is. It's a joke in the movie, but there's a Griffin character in it that looks so good. And I think of it all the time. And then in terms of just purely hairstyling, very surprised Priscilla did not make it. And Sofia Coppola's movies are always so style focused, and this one's no different. But the one that actually had no chance, but has stuck with me so much, a movie I don't even particularly like, but the movie Talk to Me has a moment of violence that is so shocking and jarring to me, and pulled off because of the makeup, that I think about it and like, it's a truly a movie I did not find scary except for that one scene, and that one scene is so well done and freaky because of the makeup and everything like that. And I think about it all the time. It's like, it is, you know, the hope that I have that, that those directors can eventually do something that I like because of how well done that scene is and how good the makeup is in that moment. So, you know, shout out to Talk to Me. Watch that one scene on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah, that's a really good call, actually, because that is the most indelible image of that pretty mediocre film.
Yeah. No, the him diving into that table is one of the most horrifying. Like, I actually screamed in the theater, which I never do. Like, I was just like, it was so shocking to me.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. You know, I always think that, like, it's a little weird that, like, a Hunger Games never gets into these. We did have a new Hunger Games this year, which I thought was pretty good and clearly had some of the better production design and cost. Like, there was clearly more money in this one than there had been in the first two, let's say, Hunger Games. So, like, yeah, I don't know. I thought Ballad of the Songbirds and Snakes was, like, quite good in the makeup and hairstyling stuff. Like, you know, regardless of, like, I mean, I didn't like the costuming as much, I think. I think those films always disappoint in the costuming area, to be brutally honest. All right, let's move on. Why don't we move on to, like, costuming? Which, actually, no, we've done that before.
We did that already, yeah.
Yeah, that's not in this list. I forgot. Well, usually we pair them, and this time we didn't because we don't have time for that.
No, we hadn't seen Side of the Snow yet when we recorded last time, and it was like, well,
exactly. We had to pair things by what we had currently seen. The last one was
2.5 hours. We couldn't just watch that at the drop of a hat.
No,
we had to
literally the last thing I could force myself to watch, and it's quite good. So cinematography, the nominees are El Conde, Edward Lachman, Killers of the Flower Moon, Rodrigo Prieto, Maestro, Matthew Libatic, Oppenheimer, Hoyt Van Hoytema, and Poor Things, Robbie Ryan. An incredibly solid category.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe one of the most enjoyably, like, cool ones of the year. I think maybe Killers of the Flower Moon maybe might have snuck in. There are probably other things I might have picked, but it's not a bad looking movie. It's just a noticeably drab, and that's the point, but also, like, you know, it's oppressive visually. I would really love a Maestro win because I think the cinematography in that film is so unbelievable. The movement of it, the way it's swinging around, creating this energy. But there are some shots that truly made me gasp and scream as I was watching it. The one I cannot fucking stop talking about is the intro of Carrie Mulligan's character, where it's this long shot, or, well, like a long take, where it's way back, and you see a bus stop very far in the distance, and the music is starting to build and swell, and you see a woman get out of the bus, and she walks toward the camera, music swells, and then boom, she stops right in front of the camera, and it is like, truly, if I were an actress, I'd be so angry that's not me. Like, it's the best intro for an actress I've ever fucking seen in my life. And, like, Bradley Cooper really did that. Like, it is so good. I literally saw that scene and I rewound it immediately because I was like, no, that was so good. I just couldn't handle it. And there's, like, so many moments in that movie where that happens. Like, Snoopy coming into the background of that window after that fight, you know, after being talked about at the beginning, being left in the vestibule. So good. Funniest thing I saw this year.
And our favorite line of the year.
Oh, it's the best. But the best, like, my other favorite thing that I rewound also, there's a scene where Cooper and Mulligan's characters are doing reading a scene on a stage because she's an actress, right? And they're both smoking, and I think the camera's on her, and I think he exhales some smoke, and because of the way it's lit, the smoke lights up her face. It diffuses the light to make her look even more of a star. Truly, again, if I were any actress who's, like, a friend of Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Garner, that's who I'm really talking about, I would be like, Bradley, what the fuck? Like, why didn't you call me earlier? Why have I not been in your films? Why is that not me? Like, I'd be so resentful 100% of the time because he really, like, shoots Carey Mulligan as if like he wants her to have like the best like looking film of her life. And you know what? He basically does it. It's so friggin' good. Matthew Lee Batik, God bless you, sir.
It is a beautiful movie. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I love all five of these nominees, to be honest. Like you said, yeah. I think Killers of the Flower Moon is definitely like the one that's the most easily replaceable here, but by no means a bad looking movie.
No.
I was very impressed with El Conde, a movie that I wasn't even going to watch until it got nominated because it just was sitting on Netflix, and that's the easiest way for a movie to go to the graveyard, unfortunately. And I'm very happy I did. It looks great and just a very, very cool movie. And Poor Things, I mean, looks phenomenal. But yeah, of the five that make it in, that made it in, for me, Illy Maestro easily would be my vote. There's one movie missing that I am kind of shocked didn't get in. Should I just go over to that and?
Yeah, go ahead. Jump in.
Yeah. The big one for me that will be the only thing that could beat Maestro for me is Zone of Interest, which similar to the sound, not as haunting as the sound design, obviously, because that movie is the sound design, but some of those shots have just stuck with me for, and they probably will stick with me forever. There's like, I saw the trailer somewhat recently when I went to the movies, honestly, because it was at the Angelica probably when I went to go see Maestro. And I just remember being like, damn, this movie is so haunting in the way it looks. And I was shocked. The movie did so well with the Academy. I'm shocked it didn't make it in there. Like, you know, beautiful looking movie in like a really haunting way. And one purely fun pick that I will throw in here, again, not close, but I just want to give this movie a shout out. Rye Lane, the rom-com that came out earlier in the year. One of the best rom-coms I've seen since my beloved Palm Springs of 2020. And really inventive cinematography that makes that, like, you know, it reminds you how good a rom-com can look, basically, if you have, like, I mean, you know, we both liked Anyone But You, but like that movie looks like a TV show, and that's fine, whatever. Yeah. But like, I want something a little bit more, and Rye Lane gives you that sort of inventive kick that like oh, I'm watching a cinema, and it's a shame it just went on Hulu basically. But if you haven't seen Rye Lane, highly recommend. Very, very, very good rom com.
Yeah. You know, this is an indulgence one again. I think the only one that I would actually put in there, like, honestly, you could make an argument for Renaissance again, honestly, although I probably should have put that in editing because the editing in that is fucking crazy. You know, Rocky and Ronnie, I think there's some like, if we're thinking about cinematography as this thing of like, what are the shots I remember most of that this year? That's got a bunch of them, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, when they're having that fight in the middle of a freeway. Wild. When they're having when that first time we see that big red room and they're all dressed in red, gasping. When there's like they do that one love song where it's like she hasn't actually lost an earring, but that's what like the tenor of the lyrics basically. It's like I think it's just like metaphorical basically, where it's like they're supposed to be in a marketplace and there's like 7,000 people dancing around them. Spectacular stuff. And there's like confetti flying down for no reason. So like those shots must have been so hard to get. And I just think like, I think we have a problem in American film, honestly, of like everything is a fucking medium shot or like a close up. And what is nice about cinema is big scale sometimes. I mean, that's what makes a lot of the films in this category so striking, is that they pull back and are willing to like let us look at a frame that isn't like, you know, directly putting our eye somewhere, basically. We're allowed to sort of be, wow, like look at that image. What an incredible thing. And that movie made me do that again and again and again and again, honestly. All right. Those are our categories for this one. You know, that's truly, I do think we've never done, I think before this, we had only ever done like two in a thing. This year, but you know, we're doing threes and fours at this point. There are more episodes coming out. This won't be one of our last ones. As always, we will do director picture last, and also including animation in that one, just as a spoiler alert for our future episode. Because there's one movie we just couldn't see. But yeah, look for our other episodes for this year. And you can find me on thepopbreak.com, occasionally writing something. And then at Marissa Carpico, everywhere social-wise. Matt, what about you?
I'm me on Letterboxd at Matt2.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.